Welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. Living Downstream is a program for anyone interested in learning about environmental topics of interest in Southern Oregon and larger Pacific Northwest region. Today's episode will feature Michelle Winter of Art and Nature Northwest, and she'll be talking about what forest bathing is, and what it means to be a forest therapy guide. My name is Ryan, and I am the host of Living Downstream. I'm an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for the organization Umpqua Watersheds. Before we begin, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. I think it's important to remember that the land upon which Umpqua Watershed is located was formerly occupied by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, and Malala, among others. We have Michelle Winter of Art and Nature Northwest. She's going to talk with us today about forest bathing and forest therapy. First of all, can you explain for our listeners, what is forest bathing? What does it mean to be a forest therapy guide?
Yes. Hello. So, forest bathing, it's probably something that you've heard kind of floating around and not really sure what that means. It's actually about sensory engagement in a natural setting. So, you know, there's so many things about nature that don't need defended, right? Like, you don't need research, you don't need numbers to know that you feel better when you sit outside, right? And you don't need a research paper to tell you that when you move your body, you feel better, right? So there are actually lots of scientific studies, and you can find them on the internet. And in fact, if you go to my website, artandnaturenwnorthwest.com, right in the middle of that front page, it'll have Take Me to the Science, and there's a whole bunch of articles there listed. But one of them that is going to be super intuitive is that people who are recovering from surgery, if they have a window, they recover faster than people who don't have a window. Now, that's a super intuitive thing, right? Is that if you're just laying in bed and you're staring outside at the clouds, or you get to look outside at the birds, that there's something about that that brings a sense of well-being and brings actual well-being. So I went down a bunny trail. What is forest bathing? It's really about being completely immersed. That's why we call it bathing. It's about being completely immersed in all that nature has to offer. So being in a natural space, not trying to get anywhere. We're not like hiking or We may be in a 2 to 4 hour time period, might go half a mile, but it's about using all of your senses to notice the sounds and the smells and how it feels on my skin to be in this space. And so being completely immersed or bathed in nature. Then you asked, what is a forest therapy guide? So a forest therapy guide is someone who has been trained in helping participants to relax, to not be afraid of being in nature. Or if you are someone who's in nature all the time, maybe you don't often relax in nature. So it's almost like having a yoga teacher, though instead of mindfulness, it's more like bodyfulness. So it's kind of helping you to be present in the space and then helping you to wonder and discover safely in the space.
Yeah, I have been researching and looking into forest bathing, and I've participated and loved it. So I was thinking, yeah, this would be a great thing to share with the audience, and perhaps they'll check it out at some point.
Yeah. Can I give you an example, a couple of examples of what a guide might do? So on one of my forest bathing walks, I had 4 participants, and 2 of them were visual artists who were experiencing burnout. And 2 of them were college students who had just gotten done taking midterms. So they've been studying a lot. And so listening to them as we were getting ready to go into the forest, I really felt like they had been using their visual sense quite a lot. So I specifically gave them invitations that avoided using the visual sense so that they could really feel immersed in the other senses that they've maybe been neglecting. So I didn't make that decision, right, until we were there and I was listening to them talking. And what's so funny is that at each debrief moment, I would ask them, what are you noticing? And even though we were not using any visual senses, the artists almost always said, well, I'm noticing the complementary colors in this space. Like they always had a visual element. And that really confirmed to me that I didn't need to give them a visual invitation. They're naturally going to do that. But by expanding the possibility, the ways of engaging with other senses, they were more able to relax and be present in that space. Another time, it was slightly rainy, and I noticed that one young woman kept looking up, right? Kept looking up at and the raindrops would fall on her face. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to give her permission to engage that curiosity. So I asked them if they would like yoga mats, which I often carry in my car, and if they would like to see if they could find where the raindrop originated and follow its trajectory into the ground. And everybody engaged that invitation completely differently, but the relaxation that I saw in everybody and the curiosity, delight in this particular woman was so fun for me.
Yeah, those are some things that I really have enjoyed personally about forest bathing, having those invitations. So my understanding is that the invitation is put out there and people can kind of, you know, engage how they will, which is, I don't know, it's like kind of a friendly way of putting it, because it's like, you know, it's not an assignment, it's not a requirement. It's like, hey, maybe do you want to try this? And then people can try it out. One of the times that I did forest bathing, I was in Vermont and it was the coldest day it had been in a very long time. I think it was like 0 degrees and so quite frigid. And so the forest therapy guide encouraged us as one of the invitations to kind of, be creative in the space. And I ended up like, cause we were kind of trudging around in the snow and I ended up like making hearts and different shapes in the snow. And then other people kind of joined me, but we weren't talking at all. And so it was just kind of fun. Like I hadn't thought about that ahead of time. But just having that kind of childlike curiosity and wonder and just playfulness, like you said.
Yeah. I had a young man who was experiencing some stress and he was also a little bit skeptical that this would be at all helpful for him. but he came along and one of the invitations was to use your visual sense to find tiny things. Which is a completely tiny, such a relative, subjective word. And so, everybody went around and found different things. And then we came back together and I asked them what they were noticing. And we went around the circle and he was very quiet for a while. And then he said, I saw an unexpected bug, an unexpected bug. And in his evaluation in the section where I say, what can I share? What would you like to say that you're okay with me sharing with other people? He said, I found an unexpected bug. And it was so delightful to me because he was such a dignified person. And he was so filled with this, what I would almost call childish wonder, right? Where he was surprised. He was looking at little leaves and there was this beautiful bug. And the connecting of the dots is up to him, right? And that's one of the things that I really, really love about being a forest therapy guide is that I don't have to make meaning for you. I trust you to make the meaning that you need. So I just help you to be in this space, but what you take home is yours, right? And so the fact that that resonated so much for this particular person, I think about that a lot. An unexpected bug.
I love that. Yeah, I feel like having that openness and wonder and curiosity, you know, anytime we step out the door, really, you know, we can notice tiny little things or big things.
Yes.
Yeah, like I was hiking with a friend, and we just kind of, we'd gone up this big hill. So we were walking a little slowly. And I happened to look down and I saw a caterpillar. And yeah, you know, I'm back from back east, and you know, it was in, I think, like January, February. You wouldn't really see a caterpillar outside. There'd be snow. But yeah, so it was very unexpected. And I was like, oh, hello. And like the person who was hiking with me was like, hello, little guy. And like, we all just were like, hey. And so it was very, yeah, just joyful and exciting. And I think, yeah, if we can take that, you know, wonder and curiosity with us, and just that openness to seeing what we notice or what we hear, or like you said, using our different senses. It's just, I don't know. Yeah. It's a different way to engage with nature and to really be present and appreciative. You know, I feel like that's one thing that I always take away from forest bathing sessions, is just that sense of gratitude for, oh, I'm so thankful that I was able to go outside today and see this little bug or something.
Yeah, the two emotions that in the certification process, right at the beginning, they tell us you just need to be prepared that the two emotions that are most common when people go on a forest therapy walk are gratitude and grief, and that we don't have to fix any of that. And, you know, we just hold that space and allow people to make whatever connections they're going to make. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that too. Like just kind of your perspective of, you know, the four, what is it? I think it's from, what is it? Association of Nature and Forest Therapy Guides.
Yes.
Like the forest is the teacher, but the guide opens the door. Is that correct?
Right. Yes. Yes. And sometimes it's the forest is the therapist. The guide just opens the door. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that just makes so much sense. It's kind of like, I don't know, my perspective of teaching has changed. I was a teacher for a number of years, and, yeah, like, because I, you know, going into teaching, I kind of had the perspective of, okay, like the teacher is the one who knows things and has to express that knowledge. And now, you know, there's this kind of different perspective in my latter years of teaching. It's more, okay, a teacher is kind of like a facilitator and a guide and asks questions, and you have to help the students in some ways, but you really, they need to be the ones that learn, right? Like the leading a horse to water, making them, you can't make them drink kind of thing. It's like, you can present things, and with anybody, whether it's students or, you know, people participating in the forest therapy walks, you can present some things, or you can like offer a way to look at something. But I love the idea of people making their own connections and making their own meaning in what they see or observe in another way.
So I used to be a teacher too. And I had a quote over my desk just to remind me every day. And it said, teaching someone who isn't ready to learn is like throwing marshmallows at their head and calling it dinner. And I think I have grown into that in so many ways. When I was a teacher, it reminded me that I needed to know my students, right? But in terms of forest bathing and forest therapy, which are interchangeable words for us, basically, what it means is I trust you, and I trust that you have everything you need to heal or to grow. Just I trust you, right? And so when I welcome you into this space, it really only is to help you to be here and not to accomplish any agenda that I might have. I have no agenda for you. One of the things that that shimmered for me in the training that I love, love, love so much is that a guide is guided. So if I'm a guide, that means I need to be open to having my mind change, to going in a different direction, to dropping, like every time that I take people out on a forest therapy walk, I'm completely, completely prepared. Right? I have thought through exactly where I want to go and what I want to do with this group. based on the seasons, based on the location, based on the people who are there. And as soon as we get there, I'm totally willing to drop it all, right? I'm guided by the words they say, by the fact that this tree that I thought was going to be covered in moss, the moss is all hiding today. The river is wider, or the river is not running, or like at any point for any reason, everything is out the window so that we can be fully present together into that space.
I feel like that must be challenging for some people. I don't know. I'm imagining myself as a teacher. It took a while to get to the place where it's like, okay, someone, you know, the students are really interested in this thing. Wasn't planning on going that direction, but I really want to encourage and embrace that curiosity and interest. So let's go that direction and see where it leads.
Exactly.
We'll be right back after a few brief announcements. Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard, literally, on our radio program, Living Downstream. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing what they love about the place in which they live. These could be poems, essays, stories, or songs. We welcome their creativity. Submissions should be sent to our environmental education and outreach leader at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. with youth entry, sense of place, in the subject line. This is a great opportunity for families and classes alike. And now back to Living Downstream, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds. Yeah, I was curious about the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy Guides, kind of what that training process is like, if you can share a little bit for the audience.
Oh, yeah. So it's a 6-month program. And during that program, we meet once or twice a week. And then there's a lot of things that we're studying, right? So we need to know about our particular location and basically our bioregional information, right? So we need to know about the plants that grow in this area, about the animals that are in this area. But we also need to know about the people groups who are in this area and who's stewarding it now, and what watershed are we in. So like all of the natural things that you would expect someone doing this to know, we need to know. But then we also study trauma, and we study healing, and we study reducing chronic stress. And then there's like such a wide variety of things. And the way that they set it up is really trusting us as learners, right? So like there are certain things we need to do and papers we turn in and things that we have to study and in order to be certified. But along the way, there's such an openness about like, oh, do you have a curiosity about that? You might want to pursue that, right? So for me, one of the things I was curious about is at the end of every forest therapy walk, we do a tea ceremony. Well, I really want to know what my local plants are that I could use. I really, really, really want to know because I don't want to poison anybody. But the other thing I really wanted to know was, what does tea ceremony mean? And so I ended up finding someone who was an expert in tea ceremony and taking this 30-day class. It was an every day. We met every single day to do a tea ceremony and to really talk about all the elements and what does this mean. And I don't do it that way, but I know why I don't, right? So like it really, really helped. And I took up a Native American flute. Because I heard one of the guides play her flute and I was super curious about it. And I found, I can't remember. I think he's a Cherokee, who comes from a long line of flute makers. And, he offered to make a flute out of a Western red cedar, which is what grows right here. And so just that whole adventure, like everything opened up and I feel like I'm going on and on and maybe not answering your question anymore.
That's okay. I was just wondering about the process of becoming certified as a forest therapy guide.
So we applied, and it was an application process where they asked us a wide variety of questions, and then we had to be interviewed before they accepted us. So there were some concerns, like, would you be comfortable in the wilderness? Would you be comfortable not telling people what to do? And things like that. So one of the things that's fascinating that I do want to say in this space is the people in my cohort were such a wide, varied group of people. There were scientists and foresters and ecologists, but there were also therapists and artists and poets and backpackers and nurses, lots of nurses. And every single person brought their own curiosity in a way that it just really felt like so expansive. It just really felt expansive. And I'm so glad that I did it with this group of people. I bet you every cohort says that, but I'm so glad I did it with this group of people.
That's awesome. Yeah, I actually have been looking into becoming a certified forest therapy guide myself. And I had applied last year, but then with COVID, everything got crazy. So yeah. I'm waiting until I'm back and have a job. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm really hopeful because I love the organization. And yeah.
We have right now, I think I heard last week that there are 800 certified forest therapy guides through ANFT. But one of the things I love about ANFT is they are building a new website, and they're willing to, like, if you have been trained anywhere, you can list on their website. And, you know, it'll say where you were trained, and it'll say the people who were trained through ANFT. So one of the things that I keep seeing from them is that they want so much for people to fall in love with nature. And they're not keeping it for themselves, right? Like, they're always so excited to find out that you love nature too, and that you want to do this stuff too. And they're not exclusionary at all in any way. And that makes me happy.
Yeah, it's always great to have a group that is inclusive and that is just, yeah, so sounds so encouraging. Because I think that, yeah, we can do more, you know, as a human species when we come together and when we don't just hold things for ourselves, but share and offer others like different perspectives or different ideas or something. So, kind of going back to like some of the benefits of getting out in nature. During our recent training for local educators, you presented on the role of nature in building resilience or resiliency. Can you share a little bit about that during this interview?
Sure. So I want to go back a little bit. I want to tell you a little bit about my story. So I have never been nature girl. My husband has always really... like, he loves it. He loves to get out in nature. And I would go with him because I love him. But I spent a lot of time feeling like, is that a bug? and so it's not an intuitive thing that this is what I do. But I'm an expressive arts practitioner. And about 2 years ago, I noticed that I had a couple of clients who... were struggling with, strangely enough, the same thing, which was that they felt invisible or they felt unheard. But I mean, and that's pretty common, right? But the part that was being an obstacle was that they felt like they shouldn't want to be seen and heard, right? So they kept on struggling with this desire to be seen and heard, but then they would heap shame on themselves. But I know I shouldn't want that, right? And so one day, it was a beautiful day, and I said, let's go outside. We went outside, and it was a couple people over the course of a couple of weeks. And I just asked, do you notice anything around out here that is saying, look at me, or listen to me? And within 15 minutes, they had these lists, right? Well, dandelions keep saying, look at me, but so do roses, but so do, and the birds are saying, listen to me. And then if we apply that, oh, they're being so self-centered, it doesn't make sense, right? But we are created things as well. And so that experience suddenly made the conversation open and fruitful. And it made me wonder, well, do other people benefit in other ways from nature? And I just got super curious. And so I went on a forest therapy walk because I was super curious. I wanted to learn more. And it was a remote walk. So I had the guide on my speaking through the speakerphone on my cell phone in my back pocket. And I got to choose. I picked a ravine where I was completely alone. I love remote forest therapy walks. As a participant, I love it. And during the listening portion, you know, she asked, do you hear what you would consider a recognizable melody? And I listened, and it really felt like, you know, the wind in the trees was making one sound and the birds were making another sound. And it sounded like this symphony, right? It was very recognizable as this place has a sound. And then she said, you belong here too. Would you like to add your sound? And my first thought was, no way, I don't belong here. No, that's nature. I am not nature. No, I don't want to impose myself. But then I thought, well, I'm going to give it a try, actually. Why not? And so I listened and I thought about where I could add my sound so that it joined the other sounds and didn't obliterate the other sounds. And my hum, the birds kept singing, right? Like I got to join the song. And so then I added more sounds, more notes. And that experience made me feel profoundly belonged. Like suddenly I felt like I am part of the world and I can be part of the world in a way that is beautiful and natural and loving to myself and to the world, right? Like I just completely fell in love with nature and I wanted to care for it, but I felt like it was because nature opened its arms to me in a way and welcomed me into its song. That's why I became a nature and forest therapy guide, is because I wanted to open that profound peacefulness to other people. And it has worked, that it has happened exactly that way, that when people come on a walk, they relax. So that's all preamble to your question about resiliency. But to me, that is resiliency, right? So resiliency is not the same thing as healing. It can be, but it's not the same thing. It's building. Resiliency is building a flexibility in you so that you can bounce back. And people who are able to check in with the world around them and then check in with what's happening inside them are more resilient. So we talked in the conference that you mentioned, we talked about heart rate variability, and that when you are experiencing chronic stress, even post-traumatic stress, even if it doesn't rise to the level of disorder, though it may, you are getting so much of your body information from inside, so that your heart sounds like this, dunk, 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 right? That's not variability. And even as I say that, it feels stressful, right? Because we call that pounding heart and heart pounding. And that is what you feel when you're stressed. And that's one of the ways that your body knows, oh, we're going to have to run. So let's pump some stress hormone to our muscles so we can get going. And then if you don't run, that stress hormone stays in your muscles and causes all kinds of issues. But heart rate variability is when you check outside of yourself and you say, is there danger? Doesn't appear to be danger. And so then your heart goes thunk, thunk, thunk. And then you say, ooh, look, an interesting bug. Thunk, 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 thunk. It's not that having a quick heartbeat is bad. It's that being able to vary your heartbeat based on the information outside of yourself is what's healthy. So in that way, forced bathing helps because the guide asks you, what are you noticing around you? What are you noticing inside you? And you never have to say what you're not ready to say, right? What are you noticing? The answer to that question can be anything you want to share, but it can also be silence. Sometimes when I'm on a forced therapy walk as a participant, I'm so overwhelmed by beauty or grief or gratitude, I have no words. And that's okay. That is a response too.
My name is Mimi, and I am an AmeriCorps service member serving as the school garden coordinator for Umpqua Valley Farm to School in partnership with the Blue Zones Project. Umpqua Valley Farm to School is a local nonprofit organization centered on connecting schools with local agriculture and providing them with access to healthier ways of living and eating. We work with existing school garden programs and provide schools with resources to start new school garden programs. Umpqua Valley Farm to School uses art and science to teach youth the importance of our local food system and promote local agriculture. Our nonprofit organization was launched in 2010 as a community building and revitalization effort called Thriving Waters in Glide, Oregon. Much of this work encompassed gardening and arts at the local school and a focus on local health and well-being. Seeing great need for these efforts beyond Glide, we expanded our reach and impact in 2020 as Umpqua Valley Farm to School, and now provide garden-based education and community agricultural support throughout Douglas County. Recognizing the true need for food access and security across the county, where upwards of 60% of families rely on free and reduced lunches from schools, we help harvest and distribute hundreds of pounds of fresh farm and garden produce to families over the course of the year. At Umpqua Valley Farm to School, we believe the health of our community begins with teaching young people the importance of choosing fresh, local produce and how to grow their own in any space. At this time, 43,000 schools in all 50 states have farm-to-school programs, reaching 20 million students and spending $789 million a year on local food. And those numbers are expanding every year. People are starting to realize that farm-to-school programs benefit kids, farmers, and the community as a whole. Umpqua Valley Farm to School's website has many resources for teachers, parents, and students to use at home or in the classroom to get connected to their local food systems. Over the last couple of months, Umpqua Valley Farm to School delivered over 200 of our garden exploration kits to 2nd, 3rd, and 5th graders at Green, Fairgrove, and Winchester Elementary Schools. We developed the ideas for these kits to get kids outdoors and off their screens, especially during this time when so many students have been locked into Zoom classes. The kits included wood and nails to construct a planter box, soil, various types of seeds, watercolor paints and paper, a notebook, magnifying glass, coloring book, and an activity packet with activities that use the materials in the kit. On our website at uvf2s.org, we have each of the lessons from our kits available to be downloaded that can be easily done at home. And for many of these lessons, we have video demonstrations available as well on our website, YouTube, or Facebook page. Also on our website, we have our monthly newsletters, which include garden happenings, growing tips, recipes, and Oregon Harvest of the Month information. And we have a map of local farms and gardens in the Umpqua Valley area available as well. Something exciting we're working on right now is our farm field trip program. Typically, we would take groups of students to local farms in person for field trips, but in the last year, we've had to adapt to a virtual farm field trip format. We have videos out now and many more to come highlighting local farmers who show us around their farms and tell us about what they do. Our latest video is with Chad Northcraft of DC Modern Roots, who gives us a look at his seeding technique and shows us around his property. These field trips are available on our website, our YouTube page, and our Facebook page. Last month, we hosted a booth at the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market, where we gave away some of our garden exploration kits for a donation. And this month, we have a booth at the market again, and we'll be giving away Mason bee boxes to support our local bee populations. We'll have kits to put together at home or already constructed boxes, available again for a donation price of your choosing. We'll also be giving away packets of seeds, as well as more information about our organization and how we can connect with you. If you're interested in volunteering with Umpqua Valley Farm to School, there's always work to be done when it comes to gardening, so you're welcome to visit the volunteer page of our website, uvf2s.org, and fill out our form, or just read more about what we do. We hope to see you around our community, at local events, schools, or just at the market. Thanks for listening. Bye!
I think it's interesting because, I still meet with my cohort, even though we graduated, we still love each other. And one of the women in that was telling us this week that, that what she's done is, create a path. She's a forester, and she's a professor of forestry. And so on their research grounds, she's created a path with signs that leads people. And I thought, see, now that's what I love, is that everybody took this information, took this learning, and integrated it into what they already do, what they already love, and made it their own and made it part of just how people can interact with nature, right?
Yeah, I love that there's such a variety, and even though there are certain invitations and what is it called, like steps or something?
There's three stages, basically. So the first stage is, we call it the threshold of connection. And so it's about like, who am I? How do I be here? How do I be in this space? And what does it mean for me to be in this space? And then the second one is liminality, which is where we get to explore and discover. And then the last is the threshold of incorporation. That's the tea ceremony. It's where we really have the conversation about meaning.
Yeah, I appreciate that they're kind of like you were saying, that there are, even though there are kind of these different stages and different, yeah, like components that are the general practice, that people can kind of do that in different ways and make it their own. And yeah, like I always love when organizations or activities allow for individuality. It's not just a cookie cutter. Everybody has to do it the same thing, or do things the same way. And that was something with teaching too, that I didn't want to try to make kids all the same because they're so different and just beautifully different. And I think that diversity should be celebrated rather than contained.
Squelched.
Exactly. Trying to get them to not have it. Yeah. So you mentioned too, so in addition to public nature walks, what else does your organization offer? So what types of things, if people are thinking, oh, this sounds really interesting, I'd like to participate, what could people do with you?
So when you say my organization, do you mean Art and Nature Northwest, or do you mean the Association for Nature and Forest Therapy Guides?
Yeah, so I was thinking Art and Nature Northwest.
Okay, so Art and Nature Northwest, there are really a wide variety of invitations. Again, that word. Before COVID, I ran a community art studio. And that was free and open to anyone who wanted to come. And hopefully by the end of 2021, we would be able to do that again. But I have moved everything that I could online. And it turns out that there's so much you can do, right? So we can do art together, one-on-one. We can do art in groups together. We can do land art, which is so much fun. I am telling you, whether you do that on your own or in a group, or it's to just go out there and gather the things that you maybe walked over before and start noticing them as possible materials, right? Like the forest has just given you so many materials for free. And now if you gather them with gratitude, what could you create? And so I intentionally try and stay away from the word art when we're outside, because I don't want people to feel the pressure of having to make something that is artistic. And one of the things that's really interesting is that so often men make houses, they make structures. Sometimes they're very little, sometimes they're bigger, sometimes they use great big branches, you know. I actually really love that. I feel like there's something so, like it's an expression of nurturing while they're outside. Women don't do that. They make a wide variety of other things. Sometimes they're recognizable and sometimes not, as, you know, like sometimes they make like figures, but sometimes they make pathways. Sometimes they, you know, and it's so glorious. And my favorite part is either when they take a picture or when they say, come here, come here, come here. And you go over and they explain like, look, 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 at the base of this tree, I made a peacock. And you're like, yes. I love that, because while people are making, they are creative problem solving. They're not thinking about themselves really, right? They're just there and they're having fun. And when they leave that space, the likelihood of them forgetting that and going back to business as usual is zero.
I was thinking too, like being someone who comes along afterward and just finding that artwork that's just, you know, made from natural materials and is going to go back to the earth kind of thing. And I don't know, because I've someone actually recently sent me some photographs of some, you know, nature art, just things out in nature that somebody had made, like leaves arranged in a certain way, or
yes,
I don't even know, just different types of things, like maybe like setting leaves and flowers so it looks kind of like a bird, or I don't know, just imagining like coming across that would just be like, yes. Hey, you know, it's kind of like those little rocks that people paint and leave around, and just like, oh, somebody else was here and was being creative in this space and appreciating this space and all it had to offer, and trying to, yeah, like share that appreciation and share that creativity with others, even if that wasn't their original intention, but like it's left behind. So then somebody else could appreciate it too.
Yeah. Well, and there's something in you that has to let go of your artwork if you, you know, to walk away from it. And, I feel like that's just as important, that moment of releasing it and being okay with whatever happens, and not needing to know the story of what happens. But for the first day of spring, I took somebody out and we just spontaneously, without planning it or having the conversation, made thresholds, which, if you think about it, the first day of spring is a threshold. And so then after that, we just saw thresholds everywhere. Like, oh, look at the curve of that branch. Oh, look at the way that this path has a tree on either side. And like suddenly everything was a threshold. And oh yeah, I just really love that.
Let's hear about some upcoming opportunities that Umpqua Watersheds has to offer. Are you an avid reader? Then you should join Umpqua Watersheds Book Club. Turning Over a New Leaf is a book club for teens and adults who are interested in learning about environmental issues and working to make positive change. We meet once a month to discuss a book or topic. Email Ryan Kincaid, the AmeriCorps member serving as Umpqua Watersheds Environmental Education and Outreach Leader, at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org for more information. Do you have a photograph which captures the natural beauty of the Umpqua Watershed? Umpqua Watersheds is compiling photos which highlight the splendor of this region. We're collecting images of native flora and fauna, as well as landscape scenes, to feature on our website and use in a calendar that we're putting together for 2022. If you'd like to contribute a photograph, please email ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org, with scenes of the Umpqua in the subject line. Thank you in advance. Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard on our radio program. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing a positive change they'd make in their community if given the power to do so. Entries could be in the form of essays, stories, raps, songs, you name it. Please send submissions to our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with youth entry Making Positive Change in the subject line. Teachers and parents, reach out if you'd like to learn more. And now we'll wrap up our interview with Michelle Winter.
Well, it's been really great hearing from you, everything that you're doing and just kind of the process of bringing people out in nature in a comfortable way and letting them, inviting them to engage in whatever way kind of is comfortable for them and makes sense to them. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we conclude?
So actually, a comment that you made me think about this. There is a hashtag on Facebook and Instagram that's run by a woman in Australia. It's called #every7days2021. And she puts up a prompt every week for you to do art in nature, take a picture of it, and share it with this hashtag. And it's so super fun. Really, there is no, there's no reward. It's not a competition. There's like nothing is going to ever come from it, right? It's just fun. And so sometimes when I'm out for a walk, I think, well, what is the prompt this week? Oh, the prompt is gathering. Okay. And so the only rule is that you can't just have come upon it, right? It can't be that nature made the art. It's that you had to use the materials, the natural materials, to make art. So it has to clearly have the hand of a human. But it's so fun to see how people used what was on the ground and, you know, made a bouquet of pine cones or made a bouquet of fallen branches or a bouquet of stones. And it feels like it gathered, you know. So yeah, that's a super fun way if you want to try that out. We're not associated in any way, but I love what she's doing. So
yeah, that's great. Yeah, I have a resource section on the website, so that I'm envisioning that could be something that I could share. Is it every seven, like the number seven?
No, spelled out in a word. Okay. And she has every 7 days, 2020, and she might have every 7 days without a number. But I started doing it last year and it was so, it just feels like, hey, we're all over the world, you know, doing the prompt today. She puts a new one up every week. And on my website, I have a section that is land art. If people want to send a picture, I would put it up there. But I also started recording sounds because I was so amazed by the dripping of snow, melting snow from the trees, or the red-winged blackbirds in the dead tree, or lately the one I'm going to put up this week is the frogs. Oh my goodness, the frogs are out.
I did that with a bird episode, and I was asking questions about bioacoustics, and so I found some of the types of birds that are native here and were going to be probably out around the time. And so I was like, okay, well, what happens if you know, two birds are, you know, singing at the same time? Like, is the bioacoustic system able to hear? And so I played that so people could hear what I meant. So I was really excited when I thought to do that.
This is what I mean, is if you had interviewed, and you might, if you interview any other nature and forest therapy guide, they will have other ways of being, right? And it's so worth seeking that out because, like, I'm not a sciencey person. And, you know, I went to college on a poetry fellowship. And I taught English. So, and my heart was almost from the beginning was, you know, we had a poetry group for students who had survived suicide attempts. And so that became began my interest in expressive arts practice for people who were recovering from trauma. And so that is my, like, that's why I care about those things, right? So I see the poetry in it and the art in it and the resiliency in it. But man, there are a lot of people who do this who are medical practitioners who could really talk about some of those things, or who are ecologists, environmentalists, and foresters, and all of them would have a different take. And the common denominator is that we feel like forest therapy guiding develops affection for the earth, and that that's the thing that turns people's, I don't even know the word, well, you're not going to vote to put money in saving the world, in saving, you know, in climate change or preserving forests or anything like that, unless you have an affection for it.
Yeah, I was thinking about just that practice of getting people to notice, to like have that observational skill, right? To be aware of what's going on. Then you start to, once you kind of understand, you see things, you or hear things, or you feel things, then you start to, yeah, like just kind of naturally have more of an affection and appreciation. And like, I don't know, it's kind of like, I was thinking about this with groups of people. Like, I was very nervous about, when I was younger, people with tattoos for some reason. And then a couple of my cousins got a lot of tattoos. And I was like, oh, I'm used to this, right? But like, yeah, if you're not exposed to different people, or like oftentimes people with physical disabilities or limitations are kept separate. And so then if you don't have someone in your family or that you're close with who has various physical limitations, you might not be as comfortable. So being around lots of different types of people, doing lots of different types of things and with different abilities and different backgrounds, it just, similarly with nature, you know, if we experience different types of nature, different aspects of nature, and come to really get to know them, then we appreciate them and we want to protect them. We're a lot less likely to try to save something that we don't even know is there, or that we haven't learned about.
Yeah. And I, this year I went to, some webinars on, one of them was cleaning the Willamette River and, you know, those kinds of things. And all of the presentations included, they were almost all very sciencey. So they included things like titration levels and things like that. And I truly believe that those things needed to be in there because people need to know those things. They did not speak to me. If you tell me about titration levels, that will not make me want to clean the river, because that's not the way I engage, right? I work with a lot of people with mental illness. And my oldest son is an autistic adult. And so the cohort that I chose for certification, so each cohort has two or three teachers. And the one that I signed up for, one of the teachers has an autistic son. And I wanted to learn how to do this with groups of developmentally disabled children and adults. I'm still working on the autism part and with my son's help, but I have taken out some of the people that I work with who struggle with mental illness. And the thing that they all mention, every single one, is that being surrounded by trees that are bigger than them, right? Like they felt held and not judged, and they felt like they didn't have to try and be normal, that they could be their own normal. They didn't have to be other people's normal. And so they felt this complete, like, for those 3 hours, they forgot to be ashamed of their bodies. They forgot to be afraid that they would say the wrong thing. They forgot that they needed to be careful about how this part of them jerks or has a tick, or they just felt normal in that space with big beings, big trees, big rocks, big loud river. And I think that that's part of diversity. And I think that that's part of growing affection. They, They don't need to know about titration levels in order to remember that when they go back to their home, that for those 3 hours, they not only were not ashamed of their bodies, they were thankful that they had bodies, because it's through the body that they got to hear the birds and smell the smells and participate.
Yeah, I've worked with people with different types of abilities or different levels of ability for quite a while, both as a teacher and also I worked for a little while with an organization that supports people with disabilities, both youths and adults. And I've actually continued, I do like a now virtual painting session with them, and giving people an opportunity to participate, you know, whether it's youths who are often not able to speak up or not given the chance to be empowered and make a change, or people with disabilities and, you know, they're not able to participate because they physically are not able to access the space, or people think that they don't understand a situation and so they exclude them. But yeah, no, I love that. Being able to include people in that way is really a great way to embrace diversity. And yeah, I just love that you have that as your focus. So yeah, I think that that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for asking me.
As we conclude our interview with Michelle, I'd like to leave you with a song called Victims of Comfort by Keb Mo. Earlier this week, we celebrated Earth Day, and this year's theme is Restore Our Earth. As you listen to the song, think about how you can step outside your comfort zone and help the planet we all share.
No rocket's gonna fly that high. There's no escaping, the enemy is you and I. We poison up the water, we're choking on the air. Let's stop before it gets too late. Or is it already too late? Is it already too late for the victims of comfort? Got no one else to blame. We're just the victims of comfort, connoisseurs of pain. It's a technological merry-go-round, dangerous solutions buried under the ground. And everyone likes a party, but no one wants to clean. Well, I'd like to see a change somehow, but I'm a little busy right now. Just a little busy right now. I'm just a victim of comfort. I got no one else to blame. I'm just a victim of comfort. Quiet shame. Oh, and what do we got to lose? Everything. Yes, and what do we stand to gain? Everything. So let's try together before we have to cry together. It's too soon to die together. I'm just a victim of comfort. Got no one else to blame. I'm just a victim of comfort. Connoisseur of pain. We the victims of comfort. Got no one else to blame. I'm just a victim of comfort. Crying shame.